We are currently at a very exciting time in the year. And for once in the UK, it has absolutely nothing to do with the weather. We are currently in the period of time between Pentecost and trumpets. A special time for us as it mirrors the same time frame that we find ourselves in as part of God's 7,000 year plan. One of the very next things that will happen is that God will take his people to a place prepared for them. Over the years, we have heard messages and read various articles detailing the different aspects of this special place, the place of safety. It is something we hold very close, especially as we look around us at a world that is descending towards the greatest time of trouble that this world has ever seen. But our belief that God will deliver us from this time is not based on fables, fairy tales, or the like, passed down through the ages with every generation adding their own twist to them. Our faith is built on sure evidence, as recorded for us in the very word of God in writing, the Bible. That when God promises to do something like this for his people, it will be done. Several thousand years ago, God promised to take his people, the physical nation of Israel, to a place prepared for them, so that they could be his people and he could be their God. There are many lessons that we can learn from what is recorded for us from this time thousands of years ago, as we find ourselves waiting for God to carry out the next remarkable step in his plan by taking his people, this time spiritual Israel, to a place prepared for them. Or at least part of spiritual Israel, I should say. What I would like to do today is briefly examine some of the similarities and lessons that we can hold on to as we draw ever closer to the time when it will become a reality for us. Let's start by looking at some of the details of the original plan for ancient Israel. Turn with me, if you would, to Exodus 23. Exodus 23, starting in verse 20. And we read, "Behold, I sent an angel before thee to keep thee in the way and to bring thee into the place where I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Provoke him not, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if thou shalt indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy unto thine enemies and an adversary unto thine adversaries. For mine angel shall go before thee and bring thee in and unto the Amorites and the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. Thou shalt not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but thou shalt utterly overthrow them and quite break down their images. And you shall serve the Eternal your God, and he shall bless thy bread and thy water, and I will take sickness away from the midst of you. There shall nothing cast their young, nor be barren in the land. The number of thy days I will fulfill. I will send my fear before thee, and I will destroy all the people to whom thou shalt come, and I will make all thine enemies turn their backs unto thee. And I will send hornets before thee, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, and the Hittite from before thee. I will not drive them out from before ye in 1 year, lest the land become desolate, and the beasts of the field multiply against thee. But little and little I will drive them out from before thee, until thou be increased and inherit the land. And I will set thy bounds from the Red Sea even until the Sea of the Philistines, and from the desert unto the river. For I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and thou shalt drive them out before thee. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee." And the people's response, drop down to verse 3 of chapter 24. "And Moses came and told the people all the words of the Eternal, and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Eternal has said, we will do." Here we see recorded God's initial plan for how Israel would be given the land. It is very clear that God was going to provide for them if they were obedient. As we well know, the people rebelled many times and didn't keep their side of the agreement, so much for all the words which the Eternal has said, we will do bit. It's worth remembering that shortly before this point, the people had chosen to go to war and to fight with the armies of King Amalek instead of trusting in God to deliver them, as is recorded in Exodus 17. So they knew the implications of war and what God was offering them. Mr. Armstrong brought this out quite clearly in the booklet on military service and war. I'll just quote a section here. It says, "Lacking the faith to trust God for their protection, Moses feared they would be slaughtered. Although Moses weakened and gave the order for war, it was the people themselves who actually made the decision for war by their utter lack of reliance on God. It was altogether unnecessary for these Israelites to arm themselves and wage war. It was wrong. It was sin. But God let the decision be theirs. This incident was the turning point. It occurred before they reached Mount Sinai. It was after this that God laid before them his proposal for them to become his nation, ruled by his government. It was after this that God promised, conditioned on obedience and faith, always to fight their battles for them, to protect them from war, to give them constant peace. It was after this that they accepted his government over them, but already they had shown lack of faith and trust. Even during the days when God was demonstrating his power and faithfulness by so many miracles, they had experienced a taste of war. They could have, should have, turned from it afterward and relied on God instead of their own power, but they didn't. God chastised his people and added a course correction to his plan. He was still taking them to the promised land. That part of the plan was assured. He had promised it. But the way they were going to get there was going to have to change. They were made to wander the wilderness for 40 long years until all those who were old enough to have been held accountable for their rebellion had died. This had to be done for the revised plan to work. The same thing will be needed in the future. If you just put in your notes Ezekiel 20 and verse 38. And I will purge out from amongst you the rebels and them that transgress against me. During their time in the wilderness, there were many hostile encounters. But yet again, instead of trusting in God to deliver them and drive out the oppressors, they chose to fight themselves. This was the exact opposite of what God had originally planned. The outcome stayed the same, but the way they were going to get there became yet harder. Upon finally entering the place that had been prepared for them, the promised land, God then reiterated that he was still very much in command and capable of winning their battles for them with the miraculous destruction of the heavily fortified city of Jericho. Though this time they were actually commanded to kill by the sword, as recorded in Joshua 6 and verse 21, this was not the way God had originally planned it to be. Originally, the inhabitants were to be driven out before them, and if there was to be any loss of life, it would be God, the only one who has the right to take life, who would do it. There was a caption that we saw printed on a mug while we were away recently. They went something like this: ultimately, success is determined by the ability to implement Plan B. When it comes to implementing a Plan B, or even a C, D, or E in some cases, God is supreme, and there is good reason for it. God's plan must stand. Again, reading from the booklet on military service, Mr. Armstrong explains this far better than I ever could. But one may ask this question: if war is wrong, if it is sin, if it is contrary to God's way for man, then why did God, on occasion, actually order the Israelites to go to war and to kill? Consider these two facts. Israel had sinned in A, not trusting God to do the fighting for them, and B, in disobeying God's commandment against war. They had chosen to be a war-waging nation. The decision was wrong, yet God compels man to decide whether to sin. If he does, he brings on himself the penalty. The fact, therefore, must be realized that Israel refused to rely on God to do the fighting and chose to be a warrior nation. Secondly, God's purpose must stand. Regardless of what men do, it was God's purpose to install Israel in and to drive certain people out of God's holy land, which he had promised to the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. These nations had taken and possessed the land illegally. Since Israel was not going to rely on God to drive out these nations, but elected to be a war-making nation, God used them to accomplish his purpose of exterminating these land poachers. Therefore, he ordered them to do what was required to make his purpose stand. So just how detailed are God's plans when it comes to preparing a place for his people? From the passage in Exodus 23, we get quite a lot of detail and a glimpse into the very mind of God and how he works. The boundaries that were to be set were physical ones, from the sea to sea and river to desert, designed to separate his people so they wouldn't be led astray with false gods of their neighbours. The land was very fertile, and God promised to bless the yield and also to keep them well. By using hornets to drive the people out, they wouldn't have even come into contact with the other inhabitants. Having lived in southern Africa for a fair bit of my life, I have seen firsthand the fear that a single hornet can induce, let alone a swarm of them. And now here in Britain, we are starting to see European hornets, which fortunately aren't quite as aggressive as their African and Asian cousins, but still possess the rather unique ability amongst insects, having the ability to both bite and sting at the same time. We've had to dispatch 4 or 5 of these creatures over the last couple of weeks at our place at home in Wales. But fortunately, they were only small ones, around about 1 inch long. They can grow to just on 2 inches. God even planned the timing so that the inhabitants would be driven out in stages to allow for the Israelites to grow and fill the land so that the land wouldn't become overrun. This is the kind of detail that God puts into his plans for his people. But there is another example which shows the amazing attention to detail for a place prepared. This time, just over a page in Exodus 25, Moses is given the details for the tabernacle. We don't have time to read it all now, but in the 4 chapters, starting with chapters 25, God lays out the detail for the Ark of the Covenant, the table for the showbread, along with the various bowls and spoons required. The section continues with details of the many curtains, including the intricate way that they were to be fastened together, along with all the other details for the tabernacle and the altar. And then there is an entire chapter detailing the exact design of Aaron's robes. Let's just take a look at one small item, and I'm sure you'll get the picture of just how detailed the full design must have been. In chapter 25, and starting in verse 31, we see the design for a candlestick. "And thou shalt make a candlestick of pure gold. Of beaten work shall the candlestick be made. His shaft and his branches, his bowls, his knops, and his flowers shall be of the same." That is, beaten work and of solid gold. "And 6 branches shall come out of the sides of it, 3 branches of the candlestick out of one side, 3 branches out of the candlestick of the other side. 3 bowls made like unto almonds, with knops and a flower in one branch, and 3 bowls made like almonds in the other branch, with a knop and a flower." So in the 6 branches that come out of the candlestick, "And in the candlestick shall be 4 bowls, made like unto almonds, with their knops and their flowers. And there shall be a knop unto 2 branches of the same, and a knop unto 2 branches of that same, and a knop unto, etc., according to the 6 branches that proceed out of the candlestick." Their knops and their branches shall be of the same. It all shall be one beaten work of pure gold. This was a very temporary structure that Christ, as the God of the Old Testament, must have spent a great deal of time explaining the intricacies of to Moses while he was up the mountain. This gives us another glimpse into the detailed way God plans things. No doubt there was other details that Moses had revealed to him, or had revealed to him, as several times in the section there is the phrase, "as it was shown thee in the mount." Although men were to build it, it was God who designed it, and that same attention to detail will be in place when it comes to preparing the place for his church. When it comes to the place that God has prepared for us, we find there are actually two of them. First, there is the place of safety, a place where the Philadelphian era of the church will be taken and protected from the great tribulation. And then right at the end of the plan that God has shared with us, we have offices prepared for us in the New Jerusalem. While details of both are very limited, we can look back on our own lives and see how God has intervened throughout, as well as looking at the examples recorded in the Bible, with the assurance that God, who changes not, will be putting the same level of detail into the planning for the places he is preparing for us as he has done in the examples we've looked at. The main thing we can learn and hold fast to is that God has got all the details worked out. We don't need to worry about what we will eat or drink or wear, or even whether there'll be Wi-Fi access. If we will need it, God has already thought about it, and it will be provided if we trust him. We might only know a few of the details about the place prepared, but as we continue to witness this world's final descent, we can have total faith that God has worked out every detail of his plan, and he will see it through. The only thing that can get in the way is us.